This is episode 26 of the Life in Norway show. Today I'm speaking to Paul Miller, better known as the English Gardener. Originally from Essex in England, Paul moved to Ålesund in Norway via Florida back in 2004. Like many Englishmen, he has a passion for gardening and opened a gardening business in Norway 3 years ago after studying with the Royal Horticultural Society in the UK. There's a lot to learn on today's show, and Paul even shares some tips for how to get started gardening in Norway without a garden. You can learn more about everything we talk about on today's show on the show notes page. Simply head on over to lifeinnorway.net/podcast and look for episode 26. Happy listening. I'd like to welcome Paul Miller, the English Gardener, to the latest episode of the Life in Norway show. Paul, welcome.
Good morning, everyone.
Now, you've lived in Norway since 2004. That's more time than a lot of guests that I tend to have on the show. So what brought you to Norway in the first place, and what has kept you here for so long?
It was back in 2003. I was also young and interested on traveling, and actually my father recommended that I broaden my horizons and go out and try and do some traveling, because it's quite a thing to travel when you're younger before life gets too more difficult. And he recommended applying to work in Orlando, Florida, in the Walt Disney World Corporation. So I was actually told by my father, you know, go off and try and do different things and apply. And luckily enough, they accepted it. And I went for my interviews, and I traveled off to the US for 1 year. And I currently met a young lady from Norway. And we decided to, instead of going back to the UK, we actually to come to Norway.
Wow, that's a familiar tale. But what a cool dad to actually persuade you to travel halfway around the world in order to better your life. That's a wonderful story.
Yeah, it's great, actually. Yeah, it's quite a nice one, because you know, it's always about your mum, and it's not too much really about what advice your dad gives you. And I hold that one quite. That was a good memory.
Good stuff. Now, you have, I think it's fair to say, a passion for gardening. Does that also come from your dad or from your parents, or does that come from somewhere else?
It's cropped up a few times, and I believe it comes from my grandfather. If there's a gardening memory, then it would be from my grandfather. He was very bad at gardening, but he was very interesting and such a lovable man, and one of my biggest role models. But he used to come in with dirty hands, and I remember that as a child being around there playing, that he was always in the house with dirty fingers, and it was, and you know, he was always getting told off, you know. And just, I just remember his very tough hands being full of, you know, dried mud, and being told to go and clean up. But you know, I used to go out there and see what he was doing. He had lots of vegetables growing in the back, but he was old school generation, so he was kind of like dig for victory and all that. So he was very proud of his garden, and we used to spend a lot of time out there. So, you know, the influences of smelling all the tomatoes from the greenhouses was quite relevant.
Interesting story. Now, you've worked as a gardener, or you started your gardening business just a few years ago. So what was it that spurred you into that move?
It was really, I'd say, not first and foremost, but it was a way to produce really more money for to go onto some vacations and to guarantee a good family holiday, really.
So you started really as a side hustle, almost, just to get some extra cash.
Yeah, the real idea was we was trying to find a way of making sure the family had a better and a more guaranteed vacation every year. So it was my first kind of spur was to use what I had and what I loved to a way to earn some money to really guarantee a good family holiday every year.
Well, it sounds, from what I've seen anyway, with various media appearances and so on, and a growing following on Instagram, that you're doing quite well with the business. So can you tell us a bit about what it is you actually do today and any projects you're working on?
Yeah, well, actually, from it, it did kind of start off as a way to make to make some extra money. But it turned very, very quickly into something that I never realized. As a business person or owning a small company, you're so in control of what to invest in, what you like, what you don't like, and what you're passionate more in. And maybe your field of interest can kind of spur off to a different area, which you never thought at the start of opening up a business. I didn't realize that, you know, I was so in control of what could I do with my business? How could I, you know, it's mine. So I can really just dream and be ambitious as possible. And it kind of went off in a different direction. And I'm hopeful, you know, I'm very happy for that, because it's not turned into more like a daily grind. It's now turned into a more an exciting venture to enable me to maybe think what I could actually possibly make this an absolutely full-time career, even in the winter. One of the best things about this month is I've just literally launched I believe that most people won't actually understand this on the podcast, but it's the RHS, which is basically the Royal Horticultural Society in London, which is 215 years old this year. And part of their idea and their kind of dream is to inspire and to educate the new generation of gardeners for the future. And part of their goal is to focus on school gardening and trying to inspire children to grow. So with that knowledge, and because I'm a member of the RHS, I kind of follow their vision of what to do. And luckily enough, they were great support. And I contacted them a few years ago, and they said they were more than happy to help me assist a local garden or a local school, I might say, in my area. So I contacted Allison International School, and through the RHS, they've given me the knowledge and the support that I need to actually help that school in their first school garden project. So with that, I've registered the school on the RHS website. So they're actually, I've been able to register the first RHS school garden in Norway. So it's kind of an historical step forward for the RHS, but for obviously for me to being able to register something that's never been done before, and it's the first of its kind. So we're currently launched their first garden, and it's going absolutely amazing at the moment.
That sounds terrific, and I look forward to following progress on that project. Now, I absolutely do not have green fingers. I'll put my hands up. And when I first stumbled across your profile on Instagram, I was a little surprised, living in an apartment as I do, and all my neighbours live in apartments. We have maybe a balcony, but not really much in the way of garden space. And of course, you've already mentioned the winter. I mean, here in Trondheim, we've had a particularly snowy winter. We've had snow on the ground for pretty much 4 months. So is there much of a gardening culture here in Norway?
There is. I've been around to a few customers, and I've been, and as I just generally drive around, I do tend to look at people's properties and see what other people are doing, because as you know, the houses are completely different from the UK, and there's a lot of potential, and they do have a lot of property. They don't make use of the property very well, I can see, but there's definitely a gardening culture here. It's a more older generation than a younger generation. Younger generations, I believe that they like to build the biggest possible house and take up as much of the property as possible with a house, and then have a kind of a very modest surroundings around the house, which is not really potential for a very nice garden. But there is a culture here, but I believe that it's not as grand as the UK. But it's a very private thing for Norwegians to have their own little areas which they focus on. But I definitely think it's positive. I was quite shocked, I think. Before I said they haven't got one, but now being within the business, I do actually see that there is people that are really kind of passionate still about their gardens. And there are some very, very nice gardens here. And surprised to see there's actually still local growers people actually hybridizing different plants to actually make different species. And that was a very big shock when I found out someone locally that had this knowledge, and he was actually breeding rhododendrons together, and he's quite unique. So for me to go around to see that there was nothing, and I believe there was no culture, to actually find some old people like this just doing what they still love, and they are out there.
One thing I've noticed from returning to England over the last few years is the popularity of the allotment, especially with younger people. It seems to be quite cool to go to the allotment, or which is, for people who don't know the word, it's like a shared a shared garden in generally in cities and towns, or not so much shared, but a plot of land where you each have your own little section. In Norway, they have Kolonihage, which it's a similar concept, not exactly the same. Do you have a space in the Kolonihage? Do you have one in Ålesund? Are they as popular in over here as they are in the UK?
No, there is one in Ålesund, which I've actually discovered recently. It was only through me gaining a grant for my school garden that the actual person who was interviewing me for this grant actually did say that there's actually a woman that is doing this kind of scheme that we have in the UK, allotments. And she's doing, I wouldn't say she's doing amazing, but there are, she has got permission from the commune or the council to actually produce one. I believe she's local. I wouldn't say it's popular, but I think that she's found a niche of a group of people that they're not as lucky to have some land to actually cultivate.
Getting into a bit more detail then about gardening in Norway, what kind of plants grow well here? And I assume the seasons are probably different as well from anywhere further south.
Yes, that's the biggest, I would say, shock to the system for me, is gardening or horticulture can be, it's a monthly, really, activity. But within Norway, the horticultural window is very, very short. So we could possibly think from that window being possibly from Easter potentially to October is when most people do, I would say that most of their gardening happens between this month, and they kind of shut down or shut off and forget until the next year. It's definitely very tough to get the motivation to carry on, but I'm trying to push the word out and actually trying to motivate people to actually say there is still a lot of maintenance. Majority of the maintenance in the winter is to prepare for the spring. So if you kind of wind down and kind of think, right, the season's over, then that's the time to be going out to actually clearing up the garden, preparing the garden for the spring, to not overwinter diseases and viruses and just plant material that shouldn't really be in there because it hosts a lot of pathogens and et cetera. So it's hard to kind of sell that as an idea to people to, you know, really get into gardening in the colder months and really trying to educate them to say that this is also a time to be planting a lot of your shrubs or your trees as it's the best time of the season because there's more moisture in the soil and the soil's still warm until it freezes. So it actually gets most of your plants in and established before the spring happens.
How do you deal with, this is another beginner's question, I should say, how do you deal with the snow? I mean, is it a case of having to cover the areas where you plant, or is the snow on the ground for a couple months actually a good thing?
It's, I would say, depending on what your interests are, whether you're going to be going into vegetable gardening or you just want to be just doing gardening in general, you don't really have to be covering any surface for planting if you're just a general gardener as such. It's only when the soil is frozen because of temperature reasons that you're not able to do any cultivation of soil unless you protect the area. But you won't really be protecting the area for planting if you know that the ground is going to freeze, because your investment is going to then not be a very good investment, because it's going to die if you don't keep an eye on it and make sure it establishes in those colder seasons. So from a gardening point of view, you won't really be covering any surfaces. You'll just be waiting for the ground to be able to cultivate. But within fruit vegetable cultivation, then you will be tending to think we need to be preparing the soil for next year to be warming up and to improving it and to give it good nourishment. So there's but that does take a lot more kind of effort and time if you're thinking about doing vegetable gardening. It's not rocket science, but you will be doing a different type of gardening if you're thinking about just doing some fruits and vegetables in Norway. So there'll be groundwork to be done just before the snow comes, and there'll be a bit more of a earlier preparation of the land towards the coming spring. So you're ready to spring start into the growing season a little bit early. So there will be, yes, in the spring, possibly covering the surface and trying to warm up the soil ready for sowing.
Okay. So what kind of vegetables grow best here? I assume potatoes, given the number of Norwegian potatoes I see in the supermarkets. But are there any other plants and vegetables and so on that are especially suited to the climate here?
There is different species that they will sow that are better and more hardier than some varieties. I would say things probably for colder. There's definitely potatoes is definitely obviously one of the biggest ones for their agriculture in Norway. If we could just focus on one, I think potatoes probably would be one of them, but possibly parsnips or beetroot possibly.
Interesting. Okay. Now, I live in an apartment. I have a reasonable sized balcony, but I've never really thought about taking advantage of it for growing plants, herbs, and so on. If somebody like me wants to get started with gardening, and especially for people who live in an apartment in a city, what sort of things could they be looking to get started with?
It's a very good question. It's came up quite a lot of times on radio, and it's in the media a lot because property is very, very expensive, and the value of the house tends to not give you a garden, and it gives you a very modest balcony. And the balconies are by no means it's not like an end game for gardening. If you're interested in it, it depends on the size of your balcony and not so much which direction it's facing. It's as long as it's got some adequate light and it's quite large. Depends what you basically want to do. If you wanted to be I wouldn't recommend doing composting unless you had quite a large balcony, because composting is kind of like a minimum of, you need like a meter squared and an area just for the composting. If you wanted to recycle things from your kitchen and then reuse that compost into your plants or growing afterwards. So size is an issue. But if you kind of succumb that and you say, I've got quite a big area, then the world is quite open to a lot of things. There's a lot of things at the moment with vertical planting. So that's a very unique and quite an interesting thing in the last couple of years. People are growing now vertically. And obviously pots are definitely, you know, number one for anybody that wants to be doing anything growing. But potted plants is amazing. You can even have a lawn. If you're quite adventurous, you can actually still have a lawn. If you have something just as like a 4 meter squared piece of lawn, just something to take your shoes off and get your feet on it just to get a nice feel, you can maintain a little piece of grass outside with some pots next to it. You've also of course you've got hanging baskets. Baskets that actually hang over the sides of your balcony area, so they're not actually intruding onto your space. They're actually hanging over, so you can actually use the space for climbing plants up trellis. Okay. Next to the walls. And to be honest, you can be growing a very small allotment. There's quite a lot of companies out there that sell salad boxes and all different types of small boxes to grow a small allotment. They might be as an allotment series in some of the gardening catalogues. So you could potentially have a vegetable patch. You could be growing climbers. You could be having vertical plants for maybe a kitchen garden for your herbs. And you could possibly have a small piece of turf outside, which is very, very good for taking away all the moisture and all the rain that actually lands on your balcony. So I think potential for really being creative and really ambitious, I think for not too much of a cost, then certainly I think a lot of people with balconies are missing the chance of actually exploring how wild they can make their house.
That sounds just amazing. I'm picturing so many images right now. And also I'm wondering what your house looks like. can you talk us through like what you actually do personally in terms of growing and like, do you have a balcony? And if so, have you done some of these things like growing a lawn and so on?
This is a great question because this is kind of like behind the scenes of the English gardener. You would think my house would be absolutely bonkers. I've got
like a jungle,
you would expect that completely. I don't really know if I want to give the listeners this kind of, you know, insight to my personal life. I don't have any of that. I have the passion to do it, but unfortunately I have an amazing garden which I'm very, very proud of, but I'm not allowed a single plant in my house. So due to my family situation, I'm not allowed anything in the house because it makes it really untidy, and I've got an OCD wife, so it's unfortunately I can't live my dreams the way I'd like to. But I've actually converted my garage into a bit of a grow lab or a bit of a man cave, so it's my kind of my experimental from the house. So I'm allowed the garage and she's allowed the house. So but I'm pushing my luck, I believe.
Yes, exactly.
as I'm slowly introducing little things that I'm currently into. I'm trying to move them into the house in small parts.
Yeah. Excellent. Now, I think we'd better leave that there before I get you into trouble. People can obviously hear that you are very competent in speaking about these things in a very inspiring way. And obviously the local and national media in Norway has cottoned onto this as well, because whether it's the name, the English Gardener or whatever, but you've started to make quite a name of yourself, especially down in the Ålesund region. Can you tell us a little bit about your adventures on radio and TV?
Yeah, from just basically having a business, I just realised that by using the social media and being quite passionate in gardening, because I think my passion's growing daily. I feel like I've found something in this, and I've discovered something that I didn't know that was there. But with that, the social media's gone in. It's gone very, very well. So I was inspired first and foremost by a TV program with Heston Blumenthal, and he actually said, "Do something." If it's one piece of advice, do something that really puts you out of your comfort zone, and something, and you know, face your fears. So I've kind of taken that on board as my kind of inspiration from Heston to actually say, I'm going to just contact radio stations and say, I want a gardening series. Hmm. Unfortunately, the gardening series can't be in English, so I have to do everything in Norwegian because obviously it's their Norwegian listeners.
Sure.
But I thought, you know, I'm not bad in Norwegian at all by any means because I've lived here 15 years. But I thought, do it. Just contact some people. So over the years, I've been sending off some pieces of information here and there. I've done quite a lot of crazy things. I actually was in the media about five years ago, with my daughter. I actually used my papa palm, which is my daddy permission, when she was born, which was 3.5 months. And I had a bit of a media sensation on Instagram with my daughter because I pushed, I actually basically took a picture of her every single day that I was looking after her and put her into some very strange situations. And I took pictures and that took off. But with that, it actually brought me contacts within NRK and other papers or journalists in the area.
And the Life in Norway show, of course.
Yes, of course. And so with that, with my contacts, I actually thought I'm going to reuse those contacts because I haven't spoke to them in a while, and said possibly I might want to come on and talk about some gardening because I don't hear it a lot on radio and it's not really talked about in papers. So I thought I might be the voice of something new. So recently I've been, actually once a year, I contact my local radio station, which is Radio Olsen, and I talk to them on a few minutes, maybe about 5 minutes, and we talk about what's coming up in the spring, some gardening advice. And then from that, I thought, why do I stop with one radio station when I could possibly talk with many? So I've contacted NRK, and I've been doing the same kind of thing, you know, coming on once a year and doing some tips about gardening. And they do ask me, you know, as an English gardener or an Englishman, they do ask me about the whole kind of why are you into it and et cetera. But that's been going very, very well, and I've kept that trend going. And I've been contacting them, and we've been doing one every couple of years. And recently it's been a lot bigger just because I've launched the first and the largest school garden in Norway. So this is a real big push for me and a quite a big moment for my own business and for myself. I've always wanted to be into a community project, and we've currently got 115 students from 26 nationalities from the Olsen International School. And on Tuesday, we were on radio together. So we had two students. We had the manager of the school, and we was on NRK radio for, I think, about 20 minutes talking about the project that's just been launched. And with that, I'm going to be going on Tuesday onto Radio Olsen and promoting that further with the manager of the school. So with the media, I think it's definitely something that you should definitely use if all possible. I do generally believe that it's only a question. So using the emails and just sending off an idea or a question, it's free. And if they say yes, then, you know, the world's your oyster, and they can you can make things happen better.
These media appearances must be doing wonders for your bread and butter business. So could you tell us a little bit about some of the consulting services you offer through the business?
Yes, I've actually found out with other gardening businesses in the areas that they're quite happy to do whatever you want them to do, but there's not much about really advising the customers of possibly that's fantastic, but possibly, in my opinion, could we maybe not do that right now, but we'll do that maybe in a couple of weeks' time. But at this time, I can actually do something which will benefit your garden. So it's kind of trying to help the customers within garden management of their property. We'll still do what they wish to do, but the garden consultancy will be to really bring to identify with the customer that there is actually potential for developing their garden in such a way that it would actually benefit their garden by doing it at timely intervals instead of just going very harsh into it. So as the sun comes out and the snow melts, you know, get in and just chop everything back. It's trying to really be one-to-one with the customer and say, we can get this dream underway, but you may have to think, if I cut that back, that may die. It will introduce disease, which will then be passed on to throughout the other parts of your garden. If I'm only going to come in for a one job for you and not be a part of your development of your garden, then possibly this may inhibit or possibly affect the garden in such a way. I'd always try to work with the plants over the customer's needs, if at all possible, just with the idea that if you were to cut that down, then that would mean that your neighbour would possibly see more of something they didn't want to, and try and manage gardening with the neighbour's needs as well as the actual client's needs at the same time, because plants need a certain amount of stuff, but also the people living around them also don't want things to be affected. So it's a way to come in, advise on possibly if they've got a problem with a plant that is having trouble establishing, then possibly what the reasons for that. They might have been given the wrong fertilizer, overwatering. It could have been something wrong with the plant in the first place, or even how they planted it. There could have been a big stone underneath it. And, you know, so it's me to come in and say, if you like that and you still want to keep it, then I might be able to come in and identify the reasons why it's not growing or it's not happy in that position. Hmm. So I think part of my consultancy is very, very unique because not many people coming in to really help develop the garden with the customer. It's more like they just want me to come in, rip everything out and put everything new. But in a way that's all good. But if you could recommend possibly, no, I could fix that problem and we could, you maybe then to invest money into further parts of your garden. So it's, I think it's a nice service to give someone some more ideas than just coming in and doing exactly what they want, because they might not be the best person to really make these decisions. And it's just a good way of kind of really connecting with the customer and saying, like, let's discover how we can make your garden better.
Paul, we are almost out of time, but before I let you go, I will ask you the three questions that I ask every guest on the Life in Norway show. So quick answers, please. What's the best thing about living in Norway?
I would say the money.
What do you find most challenging about living in Norway?
I would say the seasons. From a personal point of view, not having family for the grandkids.
And finally, what's your favourite place in Norway, whether that's a whole town or a small special place somewhere?
It's actually a cafe called Gulbrandsgiva, which is just down the road from Trollstigen. So Trollstigen, everybody knows about Trollstigen. But if you come down from Trollstigen down to Voldals town centre, in between the town and Trollstigen, it's like a little waterfall cafe. And it's just so unique. It's very architecturally beautiful. And it's just a place where you can really relax in it. Gives you the whole kind of modern Norwegian feel to it.
I actually know where you mean. I don't normally know the places
that
people say.
It's amazing.
It is really, really lovely spot. So yeah. That's a great choice. Paul, thank you so much. Where can people find out more about you and what the English Gardener is up to?
My current new website will be the best one to go for, which is coming up any day now, actually. I'm on the Instagram as Hagebrukspecialisten, and I'm also on Twitter as the English Gardener.
And there will be links to all those places in the show notes. Paul, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you very much. It's been absolutely great.